南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。I hope this finds you well, secure. Thank you for being here and participating. Today is going to be our last investigation of the Lankavatara Sutra for a while. And I'm going to hit on a chapter that, whether it's in the Lankavatara or other Nibbana or Hinayana teachings, wherever it comes from, there are several times during the career of his span of teachings where Shakyamuni addresses a concern, a thought, a behavior, a rule, a paramita regarding the practice of eating meat. Every now and again this creeps up and I get asked about it, and then opinions are made and people walk away with their opinions, as we all do. Because in the Lankavatara, there's an entire chapter dedicated to it, I think it's important, one, to really read the full text. And I don't mean the translation text. I mean the meaning of the full text. And pardon the pun, but digest it for all its components. So maybe that's a caveat. Secondly, it's also important that we read it from the standpoint of Lotus Sutra practitioners. We're Buddhists who have the benefit of studying and practicing much later period, more evolved, more culminating, more to the source teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. Remember, all previous teachings to the Lotus were teachings taught to the people's capacity. Very important to remember as we're discussing this and other sutras. And the Lotus is from his own point of view. This is how I do it. This is how I accomplish this. So it's the most direct. And the Nirvana, or the Mahayana Mahaparinirvana Sutra, which we're going to get into tomorrow, not to be confused with the Parinibbana Hinayana Nirvana text, a very different teaching. We'll get into all that tomorrow. But for today, there are a stigma attached to Buddhism by the non-Buddhists in the world who practice other forms of religiosity and magical thinking. And because of that magical thinking pervading most of humanity, when Buddhism comes up, they love to fancy us in their magical way. Oh, they're happy little pacifists who wouldn't hurt a fly. They don't eat meat. And then the jokes, you know, give me a hot dog, make me one with everything, How can you drink water? You're killing all those microbes. Every manner of silliness. So let's talk on this subject. Let's exhaust it and get it out of our modern intellectual and practice Mahayana Bodhisattva way. And I will preface this talk on meat specifically with the many prohibitions that Shakyamuni has imposed on his students to get them to truly, deeply understand the nature of their greed, their mind of attachment. Like prohibitions on sex, or even to be around the sexes that would encourage those desires to manifest, sexual thoughts. This is how monasteries came about. We're going to put you in a concrete box and you're going to stop thinking about this stuff. I'm not sure that worked so well. Or the legendary prohibitions that one would self-impose on eating in general, or speaking. Be silent for a year. Understand the nature of your cravings and their multitudinous instantiations in your mind by prohibiting yourself to entertain them, to take action on them. These are profound disciplines, right? And they're legendary. The 255 this, the 200 prohibitions on this, the 100 on this, the on and on. And I don't know why it is. Maybe it's because we're Westerners. Maybe it's because it's a basic human hunter-gatherer lizard brain thing. But we struggle greatly with the sex thing, right? But arguably, we may struggle even more with the meat thing. And what I want to say before I get into the Lankavatara is there's always an objective to Shakyamuni's teachings. He never teaches these privations to learn about the privations. That's never the objective. The objective always is how the mind works and how to get control of that mind so that we're not led by the nose with our monkeys, our attachments, our desires. That somehow we must quell them at the formation level. And that is what we're supposed to understand. Not that this is bad or that is bad or sex is bad, but to the degree that it's a distraction from our enlightenment, that is bad. That is the obstacle. That is the wrongness in the Bodhisattva way, the practice way. For Sravakas, for Pratyekabuddhas, for Arhats, for Bodhisattvas. What are the mind obstacles to free completely from all those attachments outside of annihilating them? Because that's never the goal. So there were early teachings on privations from meat. And yet, in the directions to the monks would ask the question, well, what if, the monks lived off of donations. They would have a begging bowl, and at certain times of the day, they would go out in a procession through the township with their bowls in hand, asking for sustenance. Sometimes it was rice. Other times it would be seaweed. other times it'd be coins or maybe a pillow. Offerings to support the activity of the monk. It's a very honorable thing to do. We've lost that tradition today. It's been turned into some kind of capitalistic thing. But if it can be made with the heart of, I really support and I gain from your pursuit of this mind, so that when I have questions, I don't feel guilty about going and asking you if you can help me understand something that's happening in my life, because I'm, what could we call it? It's a retainer of sorts, but it's not just that. Again, that's a capitalistic view, right? It's a support. I support you. Can you please support me in return? This is the nature of the gift of support. Whether it's food or robes, clothing, material for robes, cash, food is a biggie. And what if several of those people who live in the town are ranchers, have livestock, and they butcher a sheep for the family or a big ox or whatever. And there's more to eat than the family can eat. So they take some specially nice cut and they feel honored here. Take my gift of this sirloin of the animal we butchered. How could you turn away such a wonderful offering? It's not the thing itself, it's the spirit of it. And so Shakyamuni would say to the monks, well, if they didn't kill the sheep, the mutton, the cow, the whatever, strictly to feed you, then you can accept the offering graciously. Go ahead, eat it. Share it if you like. Because that's not the privation Shakyamuni was talking about. Eating the meat isn't about eating the meat. It's about the nature of living creatures, of which we are, sentient and insentient. So, let's get into it. Tell me, regarding the merit and vice of meat eating, thereby I and other Bodhisattva Mahasattvas of the present and future may teach the Dharma to make those beings abandon their greed for meat. Abandon what? Their greed for meat. Not meat, their greed for meat. Obviously there are strong senses, consciousnesses, avarices for meat. And since we're trying to get rid of our greed, avarice, our sensation, our excitement, our desires, sex is a really obvious one. Meat is another. Who, under the influence of the habit energy, the karma, belonging to the carnivorous existence, strongly crave meat food. These meat eaters, thus abandoning their desire for its taste, will seek the Dharma for their food and enjoyment, and regarding all beings with love as if they were an only child, will cherish great compassion towards them. For how could you eat the meat of your only child? It's a horrific thought, right? Hopefully you're with me on that. Cherishing great compassion, they will discipline themselves at the stages of bodhisattvahood and will quickly be awakened in supreme enlightenment or staying a while in the stage of sravakahood and pratyekabuddhahood. They will finally reach the highest stage of tathagatahood. Bhagavan, Shakyamuni, Buddha. Even those philosophers who hold erroneous doctrines are addicted to the views of the Lokayata eternalism, or such as the dualism of being and non-being, nihilism and eternalism, will prohibit meat eating and will themselves refrain from eating it. Well, there's a lot of other disciplines out here that say eating meat is bad. But that's not what Shakyamuni is saying, is he? How much more, O world leader, he who promotes one taste for mercy and is the fully enlightened one, why not prohibit in his teachings the eating of flesh, not only by himself, but by others? Indeed, let the Buddha, who at heart is filled with pity for the entire world, who regards all beings as his only child, and who possesses great compassion in compliance with his sympathetic feelings, teach us as to the merit and vice of meat eating, so that I and other bodhisattva mahasattvas may teach the Dharma. Couldn't be more direct. Then, Mahamatis, listen well and reflect well within yourself. I will tell you, says Buddha. Certainly, and Mahamati gives ear. For innumerable reasons, Mahamati, the bodhisattva, whose nature is compassion, is not to eat any meat. I will explain them. Mahamati, in this long course of transmigration here, there is not one living being that, having assumed the form of a living being, has not been your mother or father or brother or sister or son or daughter or the one or the other in various degrees of kinship. Full stop. How many of you just thought, well, that's reincarnation? And to you, I say that's your monkey mind. You've heard this so many times that you now accept it whole. Not all of you, but the tendency is there. Remember, I said, listen to the whole thing. In various degrees of kinship. Have you ever had a pet? A dog? A cat? A horse? Your family has a pasture of cows? Sheep, goats, birds. We've all had pets, or been around people who had pets, or been around nature enough to have those moments when we just feel connected to the earth, when we get close to our pet or our nature, or even out in nature looking at the wild animals. There's something fascinating. And we appreciate that. It's a form of kinship because we are all living beings. How many people do you hear talk about their pets as if they were children? This is what he's talking about. That we're fully aware that we have deep abiding bonds with other living creatures. And when acquiring another form of life may live as a beast, as a domestic animal, a bird, a womb-born, or as something standing in some relationship to you, This being so, how can the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, who desires to approach all living beings as if they were himself and to practice the Buddha truths, eat the flesh of any living being that is of the same nature as himself? So on the one hand, you and I are simply womb-born, one of those types. And on the other hand, our imperative in Buddhist practice to course in the Buddha samsaric life is to have utmost fascination, appreciation, and compassion for all other forms of life. But didn't we just talk about this? That life is a formation of energy, and that everything is a formation of energy? I mean, yes, we want to be awestruck and deeply respectful and loving of all of this energy and formations, the forms we get attached to in samsara. And that doesn't just mean chair, but it also means the flavor of a goose or a burger, so on and so forth. Those are forms, and we're attached to them, and we make profound attachments with meat, whether it's dead or alive. This is the area that Shakyamuni is transmigrating here, right? So he's getting to the I'm not going to say it. He's getting to the core. Even Mahamati, the Rakshasa, listening to the Tathagata's discourse on the highest essence of the Dharma, attained the notion of protecting Buddhism and feeling pity, refrains from eating flesh. How much more those who love the Dharma, thus Mahamati, wherever there is the evolution of living beings, let people cherish the thought of kinship with them, and thinking that all beings are to be loved as if they were an only child, let them refrain from eating meat. Refrain from eating meat. Again, this is a translation, but note the words. So with bodhisattvas whose nature is compassion, the eating of meat is to be avoided by him. Avoided. Even in exceptional cases, it is not compassionate of a bodhisattva of good standing to eat meat. The flesh of a dog, an ass, a buffalo, a horse, a bull, or a man, or any other being, Mahamati, that is not generally eaten by people, is sold on the roadside as mutton for the sake of money, and therefore Mahamati, the Bodhisattva, should not eat meat. Now understand, every time he exhorts a different way of saying not eating meat, he prefaces it with a certain mindset about the meat, a representation of the meat, how others might perceive the eating of the meat. This is a critical point. For the sake of love of purity, Mahamati, the Bodhisattva, should refrain from eating flesh, which is born of semen, blood, etc. Now, this is where normally you would hear him talk about revulsion, or you might read that in some other sutras. It's not about annihilation or getting sick. It's about being deeply aware of the nature of things. For fear of causing terror to living beings, Mahamati, let the Bodhisattva who is disciplining himself to attain compassion refrain from eating flesh. To illustrate Mahamati, when a dog sees, even from a distance, a hunter, a pariah, a fisherman, etc., whose desires are for eating, meat eating, he is terrified with fear, thinking, quote, they are death dealers, they will even kill me. In the same way, Mahamati, even those minute animals that are living in the air, on earth, and in water, seeing meat eaters at a distance, will perceive in them, by their keen sense of smell, the odor of the rakshasa, and will run away from such people as quickly as possible, for they are to them the threat of death. That's a social construct. For this reason, Mahamati, let the bodhisattva who is disciplining himself to abide in great compassion because of its terrifying living beings, refrain from eating meat. Mahamati, meat, which is like an unwise people, is full of bad smell, and its eating gives one a bad reputation, which turns wise people away. Let the bodhisattva refrain from eating meat. The food of the wise, Mahamati, is what is eaten by the rishis. It does not consist of meat and blood. Therefore, Mahamati, let the bodhisattva refrain from eating meat. In order to guard the minds of all people, Mahamati, let the bodhisattva, whose nature is holy and who is desirous of avoiding censure on the teaching of the Buddha, refrain from eating meat. For instance, Mahamati, there are some in the world who would speak ill of the teaching of the Buddha. They would say, why are those who living in the life of some Shramana or a Brahmin reject such food as when enjoyed by the ancient rishis, and like the carnivorous animals living in the air, on earth, and water? Why do they go wandering about in the world thoroughly terrifying living beings, disregarding the life of the Shramanas, and destroying the vow of the Brahmin? There is no dharma, no discipline in them. There are many such adverse-minded people who thus speak ill of the teachings of the Buddha. For this reason, Mahamati, in order to guard the minds of all people, let the bodhisattva, whose nature is full of pity, and who is desirous of avoiding censure on the teachings of the Buddha, refrain from eating meat. Why should he refrain from eating meat? Not because meat is bad, but because people in that time, in that day and age, might say, remember, they're in a Hindu country. To them, a cow might be their uncle reborn. That's absolute ridiculousness in Buddhism. However, it is a social reality. And if you're going to course as a representative of the Buddha's teachings, and you're seen in town just tearing apart meat from a bone, those same Hindus or people around Hindus, the prevailing mythology in the culture you're in, will look at you and go, oh shit, I'm not talking to that guy. Man, that Buddha guy must be horrible. Because they're ignorant. They don't know. Do we live in that society today? Hell no. There are some of us who are, and there are some cultures who are deeply attached to this flesh, and therefore the flesh of their ancestors. But that's not Buddhism. That's absolutely not Buddhism. And yet, as compassionate beings, we have to respect that they only themselves can destroy their delusions. It's not up to us, right? This isn't, I'm going to scare the gay out of you. We know that's just, we can't impose our minds on others. We can only inspire others to inspire themselves, to enlighten themselves, to enlighten their minds. And we can show them the way, but it's hard to do that with blood streaming down your face and a bone in your hand, if that happens to be a deeply inculcated cultural reality for them. That's what this conversation's about in the Lāṅkāvatara. It never says meat is bad. Meat will kill you. Meat is poison. It never says that. It does a lot of comparisons of the different ways that people, all people, experience meat. Because at root, as it says, we are carnivores. We are also foraging, right? But the history of man, I mean, we turned agrarian some 10,000 years ago, but before then, we were hunter-gatherers. We hunted for meat, and we gathered leaves and nuts, and we just ate. But as teachers of Dharma, we have to think about how we're perceived by others and by ourselves. What is the nature of this desire of eating meat? Is it to satiate my hunger and fill my belly? Or is it because I love the taste of blood? Right? There's a lot of questions going on with this. So it's a teaching moment. Mahamati, when sons or daughters of good family wishing to exercise themselves in various disciplines, such as the attainment of a compassionate heart, the holding of a magical formula, or the perfecting of magical knowledge, or starting on a pilgrimage to the Mahayana, retire into a cemetery, or to a wilderness, or a forest, where demons gather or frequently approach, or when they attempt to sit on a couch or a seat for the exercise, they are hindered because of their meat eating from gaining magical powers or from obtaining emancipation. Mahamati, seeing that thus there are obstacles to the accomplishing of all practices, let the bodhisattva, who is desirous of benefiting himself as well as others, wholly refrain from eating meat. If it is pervasive in society, this attachment or this aversion to the attachments, not even perceived as attachments, just a ritual, self-fulfilling, magical idea about meat, then best not give credence to their worst fears or inculcated magical beliefs. Don't feed into the problem. That's why you shouldn't eat meat. If it's appropriate. And as I said earlier, it's like killing. You know, look at the Tibetans. They couldn't grow a shit up there. At those altitudes, their only recourse with the little bit of vegetation they had was to raise yaks and other farm animals to subsist so they could live. So what? Does Buddha say they should all die because it's bad to eat meat? Of course not. It's just that for those people to attain enlightenment and a deep abiding appreciation for living beings, they had a harder time convincing their samsaric mind that the meat they were eating was solely for their subsistence and not to be greedily enjoyed, to be overly desirous of meat, not meat for pleasure, but meat as sustenance. You could see how being a meat eater, that would be difficult. Can't you? It's a simple thing to understand, truly. Have you ever had a craving for bologna Oh, man, I haven't had fried bologna in so long. I'd love to have some of that now. Well, question that motivation, that need. But if there's nothing else to eat, and the only thing of sustenance that is, you have to live. You can't attain Buddhahood if you're not alive. Maybe the bologna doesn't taste as good then. But it's not revulsive. You can eat it and maintain your life. And therefore you see it as sustenance. Nothing else. But you can enjoy eating knowing that the eating gives your body nourishment and continues this experience. There's nothing wrong with enjoying it. Just understand how you're enjoying it. See, everything about Buddha and Buddhahood is attitude. Attitude and intent. So if you go about killing animals to feed yourself, and you take pleasure in killing an animal for whatever reasons, then there's a problem. But if an animal is killed for the purposes of feeding the family, the town, the distribution of sustenance, and you need sustenance, and that meat is made available to you, there's nothing wrong with that. You didn't participate in the killing of the animal, which the killing is the issue. And even on that point, if you're a butcher, or prior to the butcher, the guy, the slaughterhouse, right? What Shakyamuni's been quoted as saying is, it is enough to kill the will to kill. Do you kill because it's your job, or do you kill because you like it? Attitude, intent. All of this feeds into these discussions on meat. It's in the Eightfold Path. It's nothing new. It's everywhere in Buddhism. But again, it's always about the meaning for the self and for those around us. Because as bodhisattvas, we're the same. We're the same. The cow, the dog, the neighbor, the teacher, the student, the self. It's all the same. The same formations, forms, endurance, right? The whole, we'll talk more about that in the Nirvana. The food I have permitted my disciples to take is gratifying to all wise people because it avoids the unwise. It is productive of many merits, it keeps away many evils, and it has been prescribed by the ancient rishis. It comprises rice, barley, wheat, kidney beans, lentils, etc. Clarified butter, oil, honey, molasses, treacle, sugarcane, coarse sugar, etc. Food prepared with these proper foods is proper food. Mahamati, there are maybe some irrational people in the future who will discriminate and establish new rules for moral discipline, and who, under the influence of habit energy belonging to the carnivorous races, will greedily desire the taste of meat. Do you see what he's nailing down here? The desire for the taste of meat. If that's why you're killing, slaughtering, and eating meat, then you're guilty of many prohibitions in a moral life. This is the corollary that Shakyamuni is pointing to. It's not the meat itself that's the problem. It's your attitude about the meat. It is not for these people that the above food is prescribed, Mahamati, this is the food I urge for the Bodhisattva Mahasattvas who have made offerings to the previous Buddhas, who have planted roots of goodness, and who are possessed of resolve, devoid of discriminations, who are all men and women belonging to the Shakya family, and who are sons and daughters of good family, who have no attachment to body, life, and property, who do not covet delicacies, are not at all greedy, who, being compassionate desire to embrace all living beings as their own person, and who regard all living beings with affection as if they were an only child. So that's an interesting dimension to coursing as a bodhisattva, which was there all along, but may have missed the fact that you as a bodhisattva are now a shining representative example of Buddha. So you have to see how you conduct yourself, right? It starts from yourself, but you have the responsibility in yourself of the representation of Buddhism in its entirety. So how you course through the public, far more involved and difficult than sitting in a monastery meditating on your navel. Bodhisattva work is work. It's constantly being aware. And constantly being aware is why bodhisattva practice leads to much more profound insights in the nature of Buddha mind, Buddha-ness. So this isn't just about me. It's about how do you behave when others can see you? How do others perceive you? Therefore, do not eat meat which will cause terror among people. Well, it could have just easily said, don't terrorize people. But without a specific, without pointing to something, we're horrible at this, human beings. We always need a thing to anchor our understanding. This is why Nietzsche made this mandala. You want to go to this internal mind that opens to your Buddha understanding, experience. I'm going to go ahead and show it to you today. I made a little chart, but I will put it in the video tomorrow when we're talking about their nirvana, because it really gets into it here. I made this little chart, and I don't know if you can screen grab it. I'm trying to get it to the camera to grab it here. It doesn't like to change distance. Anyway, this is a very simple shorthand for what you hear me repeating all the time. Is energy. Everything is energy. And energy quiescent, the formations, karma, the form, when it's instantiated, then we're in samsara, where there is endurance and ignorance of this process. Then there's dissolution, extinction, death, and then back into quiescence. This is the traverse of energy that we experience in samsara. And when we practice bodhisattva, we perceive from here to here. But what we're trying to perceive is the entirety. Then we see where this center portion is, this impermanent, temporary entertainment of sparks. Right? We'll get into it tomorrow. But, stop. How annoying. Okay. Sorry about that for your ears. I think that pretty much exhausts every aspect of the Lankavatara, the important aspects of its meaning. I think in these few videos, you've gotten a really good insight into the meaning in the Lankavatara Sutra. Because it's a early Mahayana teaching, very much focused on the next level of practice being bodhisattva, there's a lot of dissection of what bodhisattva means, how bodhisattva should experience the world and be an example of. And so, of course, this comes up, right? It's all about the mind, attitude, and intent. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Please take care of your health. Be kind to yourself, your pets, and your friends. Keep studying. You're amazing. Support this channel so we can do more. One of these days we'll be able to do live broadcasts, but it takes a tremendous amount to do that. So we'll just have to get more members. Like, to subscribe and share. Let's grow this sangha so we can do more and more. I'm ready. All right. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for being here.